Hi, this is Dory Greenspan.
And Joy the Baker.
You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
You're the bomb!
You are.
Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. Let's thank our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. Want to get cracking? Of course you do. Visit HansenbrookFarm.com. All right, some housekeeping. Calling all green girls. The Food Waste Fair 2019 is taking place in Brooklyn on Thursday, May 23rd. Join the Cherry Bomb team and other zero waste peeps. If you are a New York City food lover or food service professional, come to this interactive experience and get connected with the resources and knowledge you need to get to zero food waste. That night, from 6 to 9 p.m., there's the Zero Food Waste Challenge, featuring Kirsten and Claire from Hunky Dory and other mindful New York City chefs. And guess who one of the judges is? None other than everyone's favorite, Allison Roman. For tickets to the fair or the challenge, visit foodwastefair.nyc. Today, we have a special returning guest from across the pond, Anna Jones, the home cook champion who has a fantastic new book out called The Modern Cook's Year. It's finally spring produce season here in New York, that time of the year when farmers markets really come alive after months of potatoes and apples. You've got asparagus, rhubarb, ramps, so many vibrant things. I was very excited to talk to Anna about what seasonal cooking means to her, since that's a major focus of the modern cook's year. Before we get to my conversation with Anna, let's hear a word from our sponsor. Hansenbrook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Enat Admini is a mother hen. She's also the celebrated chef behind Taim, Balabusta, and Kish Kash in Manhattan. Want to learn how Chef Enat whips up her red shakshuka, an aromatic spicy tomato sauce into which she nestles eggs and lets them poach to perfection? You can find Chef Enat's Middle Eastern egg-centric recipes and videos on HansenbrookFarm.com. You can find their eggs at Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country. Enjoy my talk with Anna Jones. Anna Jones, welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, you're one of our favorites, and I love the British Bomb Squad so much. It really makes me sad. I don't get a lot of FOMO, but I definitely get FOMO when I see everybody's pictures and see you all hanging out together without me.
Well, you know, you're welcome anytime. You know, we're there. We're always there.
It's a plane ride away.
Yeah, it is a plane ride away.
I know I've been teasing this for years, but we are definitely doing an event in London at some point. I swear to God, before the next president is elected. Let's just put that out there.
You have to. Yes, you have to, because there are so many people who just love you guys and would love to support you, and also so many people who would just love a little piece of Cherry Bomb over in London. Oh. So
well, yeah. So many of you we love from afar.
Yeah.
But today we get to love you from anear, which is not a word. You are here to talk about another gorgeous cookbook that you have done called The Modern Cook's Year. And I was saying this off mic earlier, but I don't know how you do these cookbooks. They are gorgeous. They are beautifully designed and photographed. And then there are these just incredible recipes, and you literally want everything in these books.
Oh, thank you.
Anna Jones, how do you do it?
Well, sometimes I'm not actually quite sure myself. This the first couple of books I wrote before I had my little boy, but this one I wrote when Dylan, my little boy, was quite young. So it actually was a bit of a blur. I can't quite remember how it all came together. But also, for some reason in this book, I decided to write like a double book.
I was going to say, it's like a doorstop. Yeah. I mean, I look at the Cherry Bomb cookbook and this is like twice the size.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's over like 260 recipes, which is kind of wild. And I just couldn't stop writing, which I think at the beginning, you know, writing a book is such a process, isn't it? And at the beginning, I always have that writer's block and I can't quite, you know, place the book, and you have to sort of let a book have its own life. So as you start writing it, it kind of builds momentum. And this one just wouldn't stop. It just like, I just kept going and kept going and kept going. And also because the book is written around a year in my kitchen, it felt like, you know, I didn't want to write just like 10 recipes for spring. It just didn't feel generous enough. And, you know, to get all the whole arc of the year, the whole kind of like change in mood and ingredients in, I just couldn't stop.
How do you even approach a book like this? Did you, like, how much time did you have to work on it?
So I think I wrote this book over a year, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, you've been writing it your whole life, you could say.
Yeah, I think so. I think seasonality and seasonal cooking is so central to what I do. I'm totally vegetarian, so, and all the recipes in the book are sort of vegetarian and a lot of them vegan. But so cooking seasonally is super important to me and you know, because vegetables are at the center of what I do. So them being in season, them tasting amazing is just so central to how I cook and how I've kind of always cooked as a chef.
Did you grow up eating seasonally?
You know what? I'm not sure that it was...
I didn't.
Yeah, that it was majorly a thing. I do definitely remember moments in the year. We wouldn't have like strawberries or cherries or those things all year round. There would definitely be moments of the year where, you know, special ingredients came along, asparagus, those kind of things. But it wasn't something that was explicit, I don't think. You know, my mum wasn't someone who loved being in the kitchen. She definitely cooked. She's a great cook, but she cooked more out of necessity. So mm-hmm. It wasn't something that was kind of labored over or enjoyed or lamented in the same way as I sort of cook slowly and enjoy the sort of cooking process. And I think it's definitely been a bit of a sort of paradigm shift in the whole of cooking. You know, that was kind of in sort of mostly in like the 80s and 90s when I was growing up. And I think my mom thought time in the kitchen was a bit of a infringement on her sort of liberty in a lot of ways, you know.
I think it's sad that our moms were kind of robbed of that.
I think so.
And that we get to enjoy that so much. And for them, it was a completely different experience.
Yeah, no, it does make me sad, actually. And I think my mom was a, you know, a sort of staunch feminist. And so for her, she almost couldn't be that mom that, you know, baked cookies and did all those things. She had, you know, she kind of made use of like microwaves and, you know, she still cooked this great nutritious food, but it was like getting on the table as quick as possible and using shortcuts, which I'm still like a super fan of myself, not necessarily microwave meals, but
the shortcut.
Yeah, I think we are in a really lucky place now with food and with feminism where we can kind of, you know, we can pick and choose a bit more. We can, not everyone, but I'm in a lucky situation where, you know, I can choose to cook my family dinner if I want to, if not my husband cooks it, if not, you know, there's all these other options. So yeah, it's definitely been a change. But yeah, no, eating seasonally wasn't something my family did. It's definitely something that I learned as a young chef. I think one of the really grounding experiences for me as a young chef was going to the market every Saturday. All the kind of young chefs from London would all meet up at Borough Market. We'd all go and get a coffee at Monmouth Coffee Company before it had like queues of like 150 people outside every morning. And then we'd go and we'd look and we'd see what was in season and we'd connect with the food, and that definitely has been one of the sort of formative experiences of kind of setting up how I cook.
Who were the big proponents of seasonal eating in the UK? I'm thinking Alice Waters, people like that who really helped us.
Well, I think Alice Waters had a massive influence, I think, over in the UK as well, especially within the kind of foodie community. I think our kind of Alice Waters were probably Rose and Ruth from the River Cafe. They really, really sort of flew the flag for seasonal eating and seasonal cooking, which then kind of, I think, trickled down. Brilliant people like Nigel Slater has always sort of let that rhythm of the seasons sort of guide his cooking. And I think, but I think a lot of the people that kind of cooked in that River Cafe kitchen, like Jamie Oliver, have then gone on to either write books or have restaurants that have then informed, you know, how we cook. And Jamie obviously is a huge, I worked for Jamie actually for quite a few years, and so that was definitely something that sort of was part of the rhythm of what we did there too.
We had him on the show a few months ago, and we name dropped you shamelessly.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, we're kind of like the same level, Anna Jones, Jamie Oliver, so thank you for doing that. Yeah.
he was a fun interview. I mean, it was so short, that was the only bad part.
Yeah,
but he was very interesting to talk to, and it was, we asked him about his female mentors, and it was really amazing to hear him talk about Ruth and Rose, the impact that they had had on his life and career.
Absolutely. And he backs women, Jamie. He's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, 80% of the people who work for him are women. He's a great feminist, Jamie Oliver.
I also love his wedding photo.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen it? It comes up on Instagram. I know. It comes up on Instagram all the time. And I can't tell. Is it like a corduroy powder blue suit or just powder blue?
But we have to get the inside track. Let's ask him.
God bless him in that powder blue suit. It cracks me up.
And like a frilly shirt and stuff. Yeah, definitely. He's got a bit of a retro vibe going on there. But he looked amazing.
He did. It's super cute. Mm. So how did you get your start?
Actually, with Jamie Oliver. So,
did you go to college? Do people go to culinary school?
They kind of do. It's not quite the same thing here in the UK. There are a few sort of culinary schools, but they're quite expensive. The sort of state education system runs cookery courses, and I think a lot of people train that way. But yeah, a lot of people in the UK actually, I think, get their experience just in kitchens and learn kind of on the job, which actually I think was definitely my most powerful source of learning. But yeah, no, I did an economics degree, which obviously has very little to do with cookbooks.
Or maybe it does.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely been something good to have done and good to have.
Economy of time. How do I use that advance?
Yeah, exactly.
To actually finish this book.
I'm still trying to work that out, but... So yeah, my break was actually at 15. So Jamie Oliver did this training program called 15, where he got 15 young people and set up a restaurant, and those young people sort of manned the restaurant along with some chefs. And I was in the kind of second group at 15.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I know about his 15 project, but I didn't know you were part of it.
No, it was kind of a wild story because I was kind of just doing a job I wasn't really that connected with, and decided I wanted to do a cooking course, and literally Googled this cooking course and 15 popped up. I'd never heard of it. I'd never, you know, this was when Jamie had just had one book out. He wasn't, you know, a major kind of worldwide deal that he is now. And yeah, I just thought, oh, I'll give that a go. And I think I actually bunked off work on the Wednesday afternoon and went to an interview. And then that weekend I ended up in typical Jamie Oliver style, because they were filming it all for like a TV show. So we went down on like an Outward Bound, if that makes sense to you guys, weekend. And we did like team building, had to like build bridges with like twigs and all of this stuff to see like how we worked as a team. And then at the end of the weekend, they were like, yeah, you're in. You're in. You've got a place. And then I just didn't quite know what to do, so I quit my job. Yeah, started cooking.
And how old were you?
I was 24.
Okay.
And that all happened in the space of like 7 days, from the moment of like, you know, a light bulb going off and me thinking I want to be a cook to having a job in a kitchen. And you know when... Well, for me in life, when things like that happen, you know it's the right thing. Like, it's almost like something else has taken over for you. So yeah, I was really lucky. And then I spent 7 years working in Jamie's kitchen, and then for him kind of personally helping him with his cookbooks and food styling and stuff, which was quite a ride.
So how did you start to learn like what you were good at? What emerged in those early days?
I guess cooking is always something that I have done and that I knew I was good at, but I never really considered it as something that could be a career. I think I was perhaps brought up in a family where, you know, academia and in a school where academia and those kind of things were a bit more celebrated. And I think we've had a great kind of resurgence of creativity over the last 15 or 20 years, haven't we? Where all these creative jobs are actually, you know, considered on the same level as being a lawyer or a doctor, or not that, you know, I'm saving lives, massive respect to doctors.
But things that weren't careers are now
careers.
Yeah,
exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. And I think, you know, when I started out, you know, being a food stylist or a cookbook writer wasn't something that I could have been, you know, written down on my kind of my school application forms or anything. So I guess the real kind of galvanizing moment for me was when I read an article in one of the Sunday papers about kind of working out what your passion was. And for me, I knew it was kind of cooking restaurants. It basically said, you determine your passion by which part of the kind of Sunday supplement papers you turn to first.
I remember you telling me this story.
Yeah, which is, it's actually so cool because it was so instant and so clear for me. And I think when that light bulb went off, I just thought, actually, you know, that's the route I need to go down. And then when I got in the kitchen, I think I realized that I really enjoyed the creation, the kind of recipe creation part. I really enjoyed that creativity. I really enjoyed, you know, that part, that end part of putting everything on the plate, that delicacy, that kind of telling a visual story with how a plate looks. And I think I was in a lucky position because obviously as Jamie's business grew and grew, there were these other sort of outlets. There was this whole media side of Jamie's business which I could quite neatly hop into. And yeah, I think it's been, you know, it's been a process of working out what I'm good at, really. I knew I loved writing. I knew I loved kind of like visual arts and that creative side of things. And I think I knew I always wanted to write a cookbook. I used to do like cookery shows to like pot plants in my mom and dad's kitchen, you know, when I was like 7, 8, 9. So it was there. But it's so funny how we don't consider these things, isn't it? These things that are our true passions, how we don't necessarily consider them.
Well, I think it's back to what you said, you know, back in high school, recipe developer was not a job description. Yeah. Food stylist, not a job description. And today, you know, I think that's also an interesting thing about women in the industry, that because for a lot of them kitchens were not an option, mm-hmm. being a chef was not an option, that they've kind of carved out these careers for themselves in the food world. I mean, I'm still amazed, like when we do events, how many young women come by who are recipe developers, doing things on Instagram. I mean, really creating their own paths into the food world.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of what I felt like I had to carve out, because when I worked in restaurants, when I looked ahead, I just couldn't see how that could be a possibility. And I think for a lot of women, you know, I can count on one hand the amount of women I know who have kids who still work in restaurants, you know. It is changing, I think, but super slowly.
I just opened up 2 chard and ricotta pasta for Dylan. Yeah. Speaking of kids.
Yeah.
And having them and cooking for them.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, Anna, I need to just start reading some of the pages the book is falling open to. Ricotta gnocchi with brown butter tomato sauce with the most gorgeous photo.
Oh, thank you.
I love gnocchi so much.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would definitely be up in my top 5. I think gnocchi is just anything with like a tomato sauce, a buttery tomato sauce. I mean,
tell us about this dish.
I think a lot of the recipes I cook quite often come from a restaurant or a fancy technique, and I try and kind of ground them in the day-to-day. So being a mom of a young little boy, I don't have as much time to cook anymore. And that kind of pressure has never been realer for me, of like having to juggle millions of things and get dinner on the table pretty quickly. So this is kind of based on a nudie recipe, but I've kind of sort of...
Tell people what nudie are in case they've never had it.
Nudie are these incredibly delicious kind of cloud puff like ricotta gnocchi, essentially, but you make them kind of 48 hours ahead. They stay in the fridge for a couple of nights, and you know, you almost put no flour into the ricotta. They're almost just kind of like ricotta, and you kind of toss them in semolina or in flour so they hold together when they cook. But I mean, unless you're a serious, serious food geek who makes anything 48 hours before they're going to eat it. So this is a recipe where I've used a little bit more flour just to make it easy enough to make in an hour or so, and really simple tomato sauce, but then finished off with brown butter. So that's the kind of thing that I try and do, I guess, in a lot of my recipes, is draw people in with something that feels familiar, that doesn't feel too scary, but then give them something at the end that is like a different pop of flavor, that is something unexpected. In this recipe, it's the brown butter, which actually, you know, is super, super easy to do, but it's something that perhaps people might just eat at a restaurant. They might not eat at home, but it's a total game changer.
And is that basil?
Can you say it
the way a British person says
basil.
It for me?
It's a little basil. Just a small amount of basil on top.
And you say herb, right?
Herb, yes. Yes. Not herb.
Not herb, like we say. I saw something in here with pink peppercorns. I feel like pink peppercorns are having such a moment.
Yes.
Why is
that? That's one of the things I love about food. Like an ingredient will rise to the top for a while, won't it? And then it will get kind of like slightly overused, and then it will get put, you know, to the back of the shelf again. And it's really nice. And I think pink peppercorns are such a brilliant ingredient. They add like a spice, but it's like a fresh, rounded, warming, kind of slightly zingy, peppery note. And they work really, really well with lots of things. And I think it's one, and also there's something that can sit on your spice shelf for like quite a few months, pretty low maintenance. You know, it's not like something that needs to be refrigerated, but they can add, you know, incredible pop. I think there's a couple of recipes in here that use them actually. There's a raw squash salad recipe, which I make kind of like, you know, at the end of the summer when the squashes are just coming in. And yeah, the dressing has got pink peppercorns in, which just adds like a warmth. It just counteracts that kind of sweetness of the squash. There's also a gratin, which uses potatoes, beetroots, rhubarb and pink peppercorns, which perhaps are not the sort of thing that you would put together in a gratin, but it turns very cherry bomb actually, because it turns the cream pink. So
well, we only eat pink food here.
Exactly.
As you know.
But yeah, again, it's that kind of like unexpected twist at the end where you're like, I know what this is going to taste like. Then you're like, hold on a second. But I think that's how we get people to like step outside their comfort zone in food, because if you create like a really fancy recipe or something far-fangled and crazy, then people aren't going to do it. But if they know like 99% of the recipe and then there's one little like tweak, hit, change, it's a nice way to explore new flavors.
I feel like Americans are finally starting to accept rhubarb into
their
lives.
Rhubarb, yes.
I feel like in the UK that was always a thing.
It is a massive thing, because we have an area called the Rhubarb Triangle up in Yorkshire.
Who
which
knew?
Is there's like four, three towns, obviously not four. There's three sides to a triangle, Anna. Three towns, three towns in Yorkshire, and in between them is where all the rhubarb grows.
The
and
Rhubarb Triangle, so it's not like the Bermuda Triangle.
Well,
people
I mean,
don't
who knows?
Get
who
themselves
knows?
Lost
I've never
in the
actually
rhubarb
been
triangle.
There. I could probably get myself lost in a rhubarb triangle. It sounds quite fun. I think, you know, in the UK, rhubarb crumble is something that, you know, is quite accepted that people make, but people don't use it that much outside of that. But it's actually a great thing to use in savory cooking, because it's not sweet at all. It has wonderful acidity.
It's a little tart.
Yeah, a little tart. You can pickle it. So you know, in that gratin, it takes the place of perhaps some lemon or something else like that. I pickle it at home as well. I quite often, the last few weeks, I've been doing a tray bake with lots of potatoes, feta, and some really, really finely sliced rhubarb. My son won't go anywhere near it, but that's another story. But I think there's these moments in the year when these, you know, fresh, bright, colourful ingredients pop up. And actually, it's just so cheering. Do people here eat a lot of rhubarb? Is it not something that's really part of the...
It's changing. It's changing. I think people have gotten over their fear of cooking with beets now.
Yeah.
Beets have been accepted. Rhubarb is still, it's yet to like have its big moment, but you see it more in markets. You see it more in recipes. I feel the same way about Brussels sprouts a little. Like Brussels sprouts were just so maligned because people cook them so badly for so long. Mm-hmm. And I think even rhubarb, my dad had like bad experiences with rhubarb as a child, but now people are understanding what to do with it.
Yeah.
Another recipe we just opened to, the blackberry, bay leaf and honey tart. bay leaves, totally misunderstood here in America.
Bay is one of my favorite herbs.
And it's fresh. These are fresh
They're fresh bay leaves, yeah. I have a big bay tree outside my house at home. And bay is like, I'm not a gardener. I'm like, I literally kill like every plant. But bay leaves are impossible to kill. They just like, it's re-sprouted everywhere. So fresh bay, you could use dried bay as well. But I think, you know, we're so used to just seeing bay in like a bechamel sauce or in like a bolognese sauce or something like that. But it's got, you know, bay is just a really lovely, subtle, you know, verdant but slightly sweet flavor.
I'll confess, I don't think I've ever used anything but dried bay leaf.
Yeah. Well, the fresh is definitely more powerful. When you scrunch it up, you can kind of smell, you know, the amazing, quite heady but very green sort of smell of bay. And it does add, you know, it's like anything fresh, it adds an extra sort of 50% of flavor. So you sort of need to use a little bit less, but it's brilliant in sweet cooking. So a panna cotta with a bay leaf and some lemon in, tutti frutti ice cream, that's what bay leaves are used in that traditionally. So that's what creates that flavor.
Okay, I have to confess,
that.
I don't know what tutti frutti
ice
cream
is. So tutti frutti ice cream is this ice cream that I think must have come from Italy. It's lots and lots of chopped kind of candied fruits. It's vanilla. And then it has this kind of like underlying kind of like almost difficult to place sort of spice, and it's bay. And I think quite often that difficult to place spice is bay, but bay is the kind of like, it's the base level. It's such a generous spice because it doesn't shout. It doesn't make you think like, hey, you know, like coriander or tarragon, they're literally like, hey, notice me. Whereas bay is just like, it's quite gentle. It's like a really friendly, like warming flavor.
Tarragon is one of those herbs that I just can't embrace.
Okay. Yeah.
I love a tiny little bit of tarragon, mm-hmm. like in a chicken mm-hmm. salad or mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. But the second it's just like too much tarragon.
Yeah. I'm not going to make you my tarragon salad ever then. It's basically just tarragon. I'll make note of that. If cooking for Kerry, strike off the tarragon
salad.
I'm
glad I warned you. How are the rest of our friends in the UK doing? What's up with the British Bomb Squad?
Great. There's just loads of amazing stuff going on at the moment in food, and particularly with women in food. Melissa, who I was on the show with last time, is just, yeah.
Our good friend Melissa Hemsley. We miss her all the time.
Yeah. She's just brilliant. And there's just a good vibe around at the moment in terms of food, which is good because there's some other different vibes going on in politics.
I did not prepare you for this, but can you shout out a few places that if anybody from the Bomb Squad is going to London, that
yes.
they would be remiss not to see or visit or stop by, whether it's a market or a restaurant?
Yeah, well, London, it's kind of crazy. I live over east, so my leaning is always, always, always over that side of town. One of my favourite places to go is a restaurant called Lyle's, which is in Shoreditch. The chef there is a guy called James Lowe, and he's got a brilliant, very kind of progressive kitchen, and he cooks seasonal British food so, so, so beautifully. Another favourite is Luca in Clerkenwell, which is a restaurant started by a couple of young, brilliant chefs as well, and it's very pasta kind of centred. It's like a beautiful dining room. Yeah, I absolutely, absolutely adore it there. Markets, I mean, I would send people down to Maltby Street, which is in sort of southeast London. It's a little street. There's lots of street food stalls there. But at the end of that street, there's a place called Spa Terminus, which is kind of a bit of an underground food market, but it's where all the people really in the know, like you might see occasionally, like people like Nigel Slater down there buying his groceries. It's got an incredible honey company, a brewery, a butcher's, if that's your kind of thing. It's obviously not mine. And then a couple of really, really amazing vegetable shops. But it's not the kind of touristy borough market. It's a bit off the beaten track.
How's my favorite Rochelle Canteen?
Rochelle Canteen is an absolute cracker, yeah. In the summer, I mean, it's unbeatable. You sort of eat outside under this sort of pergola of vines, and it's very, very, very simple cooking by Margot Henderson, whose partner Fergus founded St. John. So it's kind of that style of very simple cooking, but it's just so beautiful. There are just so many places, in London right now. Another favorite of mine is Morito, part of the Morrow family. So that kind of, they've actually got three premises now around town. And that's kind of like Spanish, North African inspired food. So really, really, really big on flavor. I mean, I could literally list restaurants for like 3.5 hours.
One day we'll have city guides.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually, and if you're going all out to treat yourself, then Spring in Somerset House is kind of unbeatable. It's this the most beautiful restaurant in the middle of Somerset House, which is this beautiful, you know, incredible old sort of museum style building. And Sky Gingle is head chef kind of at the helm there. She, you know, even just down to like the serving staff's kind of uniforms. I want to live there, basically.
Melissa took me to a great dinner that Sky did that was all about food waste.
Yes.
And she just made all this incredible stuff from things that normally get thrown
yes.
away in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And they had these plush, giant stuffed vegetables.
Yes.
That I have been meaning to find out who made those for like 2 years now, and I never found out. But I don't know if you saw the pictures. They were like giant artichokes and carrots and onions, and they were the most brilliant things.
That sounds amazing. But I know that they do. So Spring, the restaurant, you know, is definitely a treat restaurant for me. But they do a lunch, I think, out in their little courtyard area, which they cook just from the kitchen waste. And that's much more affordable. And I really love that this kind of really, like, you know, quite upmarket restaurant is kind of making their food available and affordable to everyone. And you still get to eat in this really beautiful environment.
And it's like, stop talking about fake vegetables. Let's talk about real food. Okay, we're going to do a speed round.
Lovely.
Okay. Most treasured cookbook that you didn't write.
Oh my God. Loving right now, Taverna by Georgina Hayden. She's a friend who I work with at Jamie Oliver's. She is a larger than life, wonderful Greek Cypriot. She's written this book called Taverna, which is all about her family's Greek Cypriot heritage and is very, very beautiful. She was a food stylist like me at Jamie's, so she's got that touch, but it's telling her whole family history, and I literally want to make every single damn thing in the book.
Favorite kitchen utensil?
A speed peeler. That's what we call it is it a Y peeler? Is that what you call
it
here?
Speed peeler.
Okay. So those kind of Y peelers that you peel potatoes yep. with, but you could also like ribbon courgettes or carrots. You can also, you know, whip the side off a bit of lemon.
It's a cherry bomb first. No one has ever said that.
I just think it's the most useful.
You can't say meat for this next question, but a food that you would never eat aside from meat.
Aside from meat. You know, I'm not a great fan of walnuts.
I love walnuts.
I know. I like the flavor of them, but for some reason.
Okay. Well, I won't make you stuff with walnuts, and you won't make me stuff with tarragon. And
it's a deal. It's a deal.
All right. Song that makes you smile.
I'm going to sound so damn cheesy here. When we were walking out of our wedding, my little boy was 6 months old, and we had Three is the Magic Number by De La Soul playing as we walked back down the aisle, and Dylan was on John's shoulders, and it was just a pretty dreamy moment, so that always makes me smile.
I love that song. Dream vacation destination.
I have a lot of dream vacation destinations at the moment, because with a three-year-old, we're kind of going on slightly less dream vacation holidays, but that will change. It's all going to be okay. I think Vietnam, that has been top of my list for so many years, and I've never actually made it there. Where I live in East London, there is crazy amounts of Vietnamese food, so I just feel like I need to get there, eat the food. Yeah.
My favorite cuisine and my favorite place to visit. Amazing people, amazing place. Last question. If you had to be trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be and why?
Oh my God, that's such a good question. That is such a good question. Wow, that's a really, really hard one. With one food celebrity, I think I'd actually choose Alice Waters. I'd really, really like to know what. She's just such a pioneer, and I would have like a million questions to ask her about how she did what she did and why she did what she did and how, like, you know, and what her plans for like new things are. And I think she'd be great to cook with. I think she'd be brilliant at like foraging for some food. So, you know, it's like a self-care thing as well.
Who do you think Alice Waters wants to be trapped on a desert island with?
That's a really good question. Maybe like, she'd pick someone really cool. Maybe Samin. Yeah.
Maybe one day we'll get to the bottom of that.
Yeah.
Anna, I'm sorry the interview has come to an end. I would keep you here all day if I could.
I could sit here for hours and hours. This has been so fun. I just absolutely love being, well, just chatting away.
Me too. Thanks, Anna.
Thanks so much.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Anna Jones for coming to visit Cherry Bomb HQ. Make sure to check out her new book, The Modern Cook's Year, as well as her other brilliant cookbooks. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs, for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Media. Our show is edited, engineered, and produced by Jess Zeidman. Our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra La La. Thanks for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, my name is Amanda Orlando, and I'm a cookbook author and recipe developer, and you can find me at Everyday Allergen Free. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? It has to be Ina Garden. It has to be Ina. She completely changed how I thought about entertaining and cooking for others and welcoming people into your home. She really inspired me with what I want to do with my life and my career.